From the Radio Ranch, in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, December 13th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Hawaiian Shirt Friday, come on, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud, sing it proud.
Love this.
Sweet it is. Oh, yeah, the sweetest sound this side of heaven. Just the way to start off a weekend. And we need to start the blogcast off officially with
the Daily Datagram.
Yep. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. Something for you here to think about. This is a good one. It says, under capitalism, man exploits man. I think we kind of knew that, didn't we? And under socialism, it's just the opposite.
You're messing with my Zen thing, man.
All right, let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
I'm excited.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
I want to be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
You really think so?
You might be quizzed.
Well, let's see here, kids. It was on this day in 1962, NASA launched Relay 1, the first active repeater communication satellite in orbit. Repeater communication satellite in orbit. Repeater communication satellite. See what I did there? Huh? Yeah. All right. It was on this day in 1972, Eugene Cernan and Harrison Schmitt began the third and final extravehicular activity, or EVA, or moonwalk, of Apollo 17. Yeah. And to date, they are the last humans to set foot on the moon. And their footprints are still there.
This place is freaking awesome!
I guess we can breathe a little easier now that we know this trans activist who allegedly attacked Nancy Mace is in the Hoosgow. Thank goodness. The suspect, of course, assaulted her because she opposed transgender people using the Capitol building's restrooms. At least using ladies' restrooms. Now, the guy's name is James McIntyre, and he was bagged for allegedly assaulting Mace. And the attack, of course, has heightened the debate surrounding her proposed legislation. And this is probably a good thing. Not a good thing that she was attacked, of course, but a good thing that we know about it. Good thing that she survived, and it has heightened discussion. You know, people who are advocating for this transgenderism, I think have kind of a sickness going on, a mental sickness. I mean, if you want to do your cross-dressing thing, that's fine. I had a personal friend who was a cross-dresser, but he did it really just recreationally. An interesting fella. He was a journalist by trade. But when you get to the point where you're advocating for the mutilation of adolescent humans, and when you get to the point where you have actual people within academia, and I'm talking about public schools, elementary schools even, involved in trying to conceal from parents the desires of the students. Again, we're talking elementary age students who express this momentary desire to change their gender. I mean, that's not even the job of public schools. Why is this even being discussed within public school systems? And I would argue that any faculty member who assists in concealing from parents the intention, the serious intention of assisting a child by giving them blockers, I don't know. I just think people like that should be in jail. Chalk it up to my age. Chalk it up to my conservatism. Chalk it up to my experience in life. I mean, commandeering children away from their parents. I mean, that's the height of obscenity right there. I put that right up alongside pornography. So this guy, James McIntyre, 33 years old. He's in the Who's Gal. Make no mistake about it. Nancy Mace was physically attacked. And she immediately linked the assault to her recent legislative efforts. Here's what she wrote on social media. She says, I was physically accosted tonight on Capitol grounds over my fight to protect women. Now, this, of course, was the other night. Capitol Police have apprehended him. All of the violence and threats continue to prove our point. Women have a right to safety. Your threats will not deter my fight for women. I don't know if you've seen her in action, if you've seen any video clips of Nancy Mace, but she is not a person to be trifled with. Now, the assault comes after she introduced a bill on Capitol Hill that would prohibit transgender people from using restrooms that correspond to their gender identity. Now, this legislative move sparked a heated debate, which I find mind-numbing. Why should this even be debated? The argument should be over and done with now. But they've got supporters hailing Mace's dedication to women's rights and safety, thank goodness, while the idiot detractors claim it promotes discrimination against the transgender community. All right, well, how big a community are we talking about here in the first place? Transgender community? Really? Because I'm not seeing them when I'm out and about in my life. Of course, I don't get out and about as much as I used to. I mean, I work from my home studio. And it's not like I'm out in the hustling, bustling center of Houston anymore. That activity stopped a couple of years ago. It's not like I have to get up in the morning and jump into the car and drive somewhere. So I'm not mixing with a lot of people, at least not to the degree that I used to, but I still get out. And I'm not seeing packs or herds of transgender people moving about. Now, you need to understand this about Nancy Mace, because this is an important ingredient to the overall story, and that is she's a sexual abuse survivor. And this has raised concerns about restroom safety. She defended her bill, saying, if you're a biological man, you should not use women's restrooms. I couldn't agree more. I have three daughters. I have three granddaughters. She says, if you're a biological man, you should not use women's restrooms. The Congresswoman emphasized that her legislation is critical to protecting the safety and dignity of female lawmakers and staff by requiring single-sex facility use based on biological sex. The fact that this is even having to be discussed, I find mind-boggling. Because these people who are advocating for men using women's restroom facilities and men competing in female sports, I believe very firmly that this is a byproduct of another form of mental illness. Address that. And then maybe we'll start making some progress. I mean, these people on the left, they call themselves progressives. Well, if you want to be truly progressive in a positive sense, you're going to start addressing this mental illness that we're dealing with here. Now, naturally, the incident has exacerbated the ongoing national debate over gender identity and rights. And here again, I kind of bristle when I hear that word rights, transgender rights. Really? Now, you got Sarah McBride, the first openly transgender person elected to Congress, called Mace's bill a distraction from the real issues confronting Americans. What, Ms. McBride or Mr. McBride? What are those issues? Mental illness? Apparently not. But Mace, on the other hand, rejected McBride's criticism, arguing that biological men should not have a say in women's spaces. And I agree. I think anybody with a healthy brain would agree to that. Did I happen to mention that Nancy Mace is not a person to be trifled with? Now, the assault on Representative Mace has fueled an already heated debate. This was never not a heated debate, okay, over her proposed legislation. And while her supporters see the incident as validation of her concerns about women's safety, critics are arguing that the legislation is exacerbating tensions and potentially endangering transgender people. And here again, I'm not seeing a lot of transgender people being attacked or beaten up and left at the roadside. So as this controversy unfolds, as it will, it's clear that the intersection of women's rights, transgender rights, and public safety is going to continue to dominate political discourse, with Representative Mace's experience serving as a flashpoint in this complex and emotionally charged debate. And I find the timing of all this rather interesting, too, because we're still reeling in the wake of the shooting of the, was he a CEO? I think he was the CEO of United Healthcare. I mean, that is an issue. And it's pretty clear now, it appears, that the shooter in that incident, the attacker, was mentally ill. And there may be extenuating circumstances behind his illness, but by golly, this is what we need to address, the mental illness. Instead of treating this situation of transgenderism, I'm talking about the militant transgenderism. I'm not talking about recreational cross-dressing. You want to do that? Fine. You want to go down and parade as a Cher impersonator? Fine. Knock yourself out. I used to go to the Montrose Arts Festival every year in the Montrose District of Houston back in the 70s and 80s. It was fun, but it was recreational. Nobody was pushing for men to use women's restrooms. Nobody was pushing for men to compete in female sports. I think the ultimate obscenity was when they allowed a man to get into the ring, a boxing ring, with a female. That should never have been allowed to happen. So, as long as this issue goes unresolved, and it's a long way from being resolved, what we have here is a major case of immorality, and we've got far too many people not willing to deal with it. Earlier this week, Randy DeSoto published an op-ed in the Western Journal, very good piece, where he says the Biden administration's State Department feted former Secretary of State John Kerry with a portrait unveiling. This took place on Tuesday. And both current Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Kerry took the opportunity to celebrate the fall of the regime of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. What was omitted from their remarks is Kerry's multiple meetings with Assad and the former secretary's efforts to enlist the Syrian leader's support for U.S. policy goals in the Middle East. Meanwhile, the left-wing media and those in Washington are still trying to scuttle Tulsi Gabbard's appointment as director of national intelligence by, in part, pointing to a meeting she had with Assad in 2017 as disqualifying. See the hypocrisy here? Oh, I tell you what, I get up in the morning and I can just smell the hypocrisy. It's right there in the air, all over the country. Now, the publication known as The Independent reported in 2013 that Kerry met with Assad at least six times, including in February of 2009, while he was chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And Kerry said at a news conference in Damascus, President Barack Obama's administration considers Syria a key player in Washington's efforts to revive the stalled Middle East peace process. Syria is an essential player in bringing peace and stability to the region. Yeah. Well, the Wall Street Journal reported in April of 2010 that Kerry met with Assad again. And again, he said in a statement afterward, President al-Assad and I had a very positive discussion on the formidable challenges facing this region, and we found agreement on a number of ways in which both of us and other countries can contribute significantly to changing the dynamics that exist today. Well, first of all, I think you're pretty much aware of the fact that John Kerry is so inept, that guy can't find his backside with both hands and a GPS. But the Western Journal at the time noted, engagement with Syria has become a central tenet of the Obama administration's Mideast policy. Washington believes Syria is key to any concerted push to resume comprehensive Mideast peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians. Now, the only good thing that Bashar al-Assad did was he protected Christians in Syria. So they no longer have that now. Christians are going to have to leave, and they're probably going to have to leave very clandestinely, because I get the idea that the same thing is happening here that happened in Afghanistan when the Taliban took over. This is the return of ISIS. It really is. You're about to see some major bloodshed. This is not a good thing. Now, yeah, Assad was not a good guy. But these people taking over, they're not good people either. So, I don't know. We're just kind of taking a wait and see attitude with this thing. Now, the journal also pointed out that Assad had ignored requests from the administration to break its alliance with Tehran and to revoke its support of Hezbollah and Hamas. But, you know, that's not going to happen. And the journal recounted that while Kerry had co-sponsored the 2003 Syrian Accountability Act, imposing economic sanctions on Syria, he had since pushed for engagement with Syria, including the loosening of U.S. sanctions, which is an important point to make because John Kerry, given the choice, will always choose the far leftist point of view, the far leftist policy. And he also advocated for Obama to reopen diplomatic relations with Syria by sending an ambassador to Damascus, which the administration did. So Kerry did change his tune after Assad used chemical weapons against those Syrians fighting against his regime. He also later lamented in 2016 that Assad crossed Obama's red line of using the weapons, but the president then didn't do anything. He didn't authorize military strikes against Assad. So Kerry's views on Assad and Syria have been all over the map. Of course, everything Kerry's done has been all over the map. And meanwhile, Gabbard, during a trip to Syria in 2017 as a congresswoman to view conditions on the ground during the nation's civil war, agreed to take a last-minute meeting with Assad. And she said, in fact, she was talking to the Associated Press at the time, she says, I think we should be ready to meet with anyone if there's a chance can help bring about an end to this war, which is causing the Syrian people so much suffering. And you notice she's always in that mode. This is a woman with combat experience in the U.S. military, and she's always concerned about the least defended people, the civilians. I mean, that woman's heart is in the right place. Not just her heart, her mouth is too. Now, according to the Associated Press, let's just go ahead and read from the Associated Press. It Gabbard said her trip included stops in Aleppo and Damascus, Syria's capital. She also visited Beirut during the trip, which began in mid-January. Gabbard said she also met with refugees, Syrian opposition leaders, widows, and family members of Syrians fighting alongside groups like Al-Qaeda and Syrians aligned with the Assad regime. Well, at that time, Gabbard criticized what she characterized as the U.S. wars of regime change in Iraq, Libya, and Syria. And she said each has resulted in, quoting her, unimaginable suffering, devastating loss of life, and the strengthening of groups like Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. You know, ISIS. She said, my visit to Syria has made it abundantly clear Our counterproductive regime change war does not serve America's interest, and it certainly isn't in the interest of the Syrian people. Well, of course not. And again, this goes back on what we've all been bitching about for how long now, and that is these long, long wars of attrition. That's what these are, those regime change wars. When 9/11 happened, we went into Afghanistan and started blowing the place up. We were there for 20 years. This is insanity. So the AP reported Tuesday that Gabbard's views on Syria faced fresh scrutiny following the fall of Assad. Really? I mean, the Associated Press is so leftist, it's insane. I'm amazed that they're still in business. So we need to be clear about this. Unlike Kerry, her view has been consistent. And she took the position that Trump has. The U.S. should stay out of the events unfolding in Syria right now. I mean, I like the idea that she's a nominee for Director of National Intelligence, because I think she's going to do a very good job with that position. Meanwhile, here are her remarks when she was asked to comment in the wake of the fall of the regime of Bashar al-Assad.
I want to address the issue that's in the headlines right now. I stand in full support and wholeheartedly agree with the statements that President Trump has made over these last few days with regards to the developments in Syria. My own views and experiences have been shaped by my multiple deployments and seeing firsthand the cost of war and the threat of Islamist terrorism. It's one of the many reasons why I appreciate President Trump's leadership and his election, where he is fully committed, as he has said over and over, to bringing about an end to wars, demonstrating peace through strength, and putting the national security interests and the safety, security, and freedom of the American people first and foremost.
Now, as the issue was going down, Trump said on social media, and I mentioned this the other day, he said, Syria is a mess, but is not our friend, and the United States should have nothing to do with it. This is not our fight. Let it play out. Don't get involved. Well, far from being disqualifying, Gabbard's views regarding Syria are, they're certainly consistent, and they're in line with her soon-to-be commander-in-chief. So if meeting with Assad is disqualifying, Kerry should have been disqualified many times over, but he wasn't. Instead, he was approved in 2013 as Obama's Secretary of State by a vote of 94-3. I mean, this is the kind of thing that Donald Trump has to clean up. He's got a monumental job ahead of him, but he's got a good staff selected. Now, if they'll just get confirmed, we'll be in good shape. So, as Trump's DNI nominee, Tulsi Gabbard deserves at least the same deference that John Kerry got. Wednesday evening, I got word of this, and it is just, it's classic. In anticipation of a forthcoming story questioning Pete Hegseth's acceptance into West Point, he was going on the offensive, which I expected of him. I mean, when are they going to learn, these people in the media? When are they going to learn? When you deal with a fighter, you can expect a fight. So Pete ended up bringing the receipts to social media showing that he was indeed offered a spot at West Point in 1999. So to hear a lot of the pundits talk about it, they say that Pete Hegseth is in the political fight of his life to keep his defense secretary nomination. And perhaps that's true. I don't quite see it that way. I see Pete as very well qualified, and I think he's going to win this thing. But he lashed out at ProPublica. This is early Wednesday morning when this started going down. I didn't catch it until Wednesday evening, but he accused the left-wing hack group of readying a story alleging that he wasn't accepted to West Point that year. Well, he ultimately chose to attend Princeton University, and the reason he did it was because of his penchant for basketball. So in his post on social media, Hegseth wrote, "We understand that ProPublica, the left-wing hack group, is planning to publish a knowingly false report that I was not accepted at West Point in 1999. Here's my letter of acceptance signed by West Point Superintendent Lieutenant General Daniel Chrisman, U.S. Army." In the letter, Lieutenant General Chrisman cites Hegseth's exceptional potential for future service to your country and fellow citizens. There it is in black and white on social media. West Point's education and training programs will give you the opportunity to develop that potential fully. So while at Princeton, Hegseth enrolled in the Army ROTC chapter following the 9/11 attacks. And he explained about his motivation to serve. He said, "It was a validator for me and an entire generation." So after graduation, he completed basic training at Fort Benning, Georgia. Saw his first stationing at Guantanamo, overseeing prisoners of war. He returned to civilian life briefly before volunteering to serve as an infantryman in Iraq. And when he retired from service and went home to New York, he found the transition jarring, as is usually the case. He says, "I went from being in a combat zone to being in an apartment in Manhattan and without any contact other than phone calls here or an email there with the guys who I'd served with, and it was jarring. I didn't do much, and I drank a lot trying to process what I'd been through while dealing with a civilian world that frankly just didn't seem to care, as is always the case." Central to the controversy around Hegseth's nomination, of course, though, to lead the Department of Defense is whether his post-service drinking proved to be a problem. Although he has spoken publicly about his difficulty in permanently transitioning back to civilian life after service, he maintains that he never considered himself an alcoholic. And former colleagues at Fox News and soldiers under his leadership have come forward to praise his professionalism. And at the same time, his mother has rebuffed allegations that he's been hostile to women, including his ex-wife. You know, that's exactly what this is. It's a hit piece. And it's a hit piece not just by ProPublica, it's a hit piece by all of mainstream media. And once again, I have to assert that mainstream media, it could be argued, is a criminal enterprise. Let's usher in the weekend with a few laughs from Sean Reynolds.
"I've actually not been getting out a whole lot lately because my wife and I just had a baby. Number 6. There it is right there. You guys couldn't even pretend like that was okay and normal, could you? Immediately shifted gears from applauding to praying for me. I appreciate that. It's a different set of questions when you have 6 versus 1, isn't it? When you have 1, what do they say? Oh, is it a boy? Is it a girl? How much did it weigh? What did you name it? When it's 6, the questions are more like, why? You got a farm? Or a reality show? No, we have 6 because my wife is Irish Catholic. And I am a good little helper, so." "Put those two together and poof, we're the Duggars, so." "We got the hospital bill back for that baby. Listen to this, $0. Zero, not because we have great insurance, nothing like that. Turns out we'd filled up our hospital punch card. And you get that 6-1 free. Oh, all the savings." "It's not entirely true. One of my 6 is adopted. We adopted our 5th child because we are crazy people. My wife, she works in daycare, and that's where she met the little guy, and he needed a home, and my wife has a big heart, and that's what happens when your wife works in daycare and starts bringing her work home with her." "But this is cool, though. The baby number 6, my youngest was 8 before baby number 6 came along, so we kind of thought we were out of the game. So this is the first child we've had during, like, the big social media boom. So my wife has been posting pictures of the baby on Facebook, which has led to my mom finally joining Facebook. And it turns out that my mom has no business being on Facebook. She calls it the Facebook. And she's driving me crazy. Here's what she does. She posts things on there, and then she calls me on the phone 2 hours later to see if I saw what she posted. It's like, hey, Mom, you're ruining the best part of social media, which is not having to talk to anyone.
Right. Have a terrific weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time this weekend just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?